Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
We live in the shadow of crime, resigned to be the victims of fear, of violence, of social impotence.
You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water, you risk your life. And nowadays you breathe, and you risk your life.
The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. Sometimes, because it's fun.
Your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio on Wednesday nights at the new time, ladies and gentlemen, of 4 p.m. Pacific. And I think that's like getting into the 7 o'clock fancy news hour in the Eastern Seaboard time zone there. So that's good to know. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, before we begin with our latest guest and special broadcast, I want to remind you that this is entirely done and entirely possible through your contributions and donations, a model which we've adopted not less because of somebody who drew our attention to the idea, which wasn't even his own idea. The man's name is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and the idea was peer-to-peer economy, whereby somebody gives you money so that you can make content so that you don't have to compromise when you're shilling a product, right? You could just tell people the truth, and that's the ideal, isn't it? The unfortunate swing gate of that is you realize that people who donate for the purposes of telling the truth and getting the truth out there, when you actually do tell the truth, sometimes it's not the one that they wanted to hear, and then they stop donating. But, you know, you win some, you lose some, you do what you can. James Corbett of the Corbett Report, after 10 years, welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Was this the third time we've had you on, mate?
I think that might be. And you're so right about that. I personally detest advertising in general, but specifically on news programs, I think it's particularly disgusting in that context, which is exactly why I think exactly peer-to-peer. We live in an economy where people can support the people that they I think are bringing them important information, so why not do it that way? And it's weird because, of course, most people, I think, at least my audience tends to prefer that, but I actually had someone once accuse me of censorship because I'm not allowing advertising on my podcast, which is an odd way of thinking about it. but hey, I don't know. I guess some people prefer that. It reminds me, recently I was watching an old clip of Jim Garrison on the Tonight Show or whatever show Johnny Carson was hosting at that time. It was the late 1960s. And it was, it has to be seen to be believed, but it was this weird clip where they're talking about, obviously, the JFK assassination and all of this really heavy stuff. And Jim Garrison lays it out and he says something to the effect, yes, I believe it was a conspiracy that went to the highest levels of government to assassinate our president. And Johnny Carson's just like, I can't get on board with that. And then he turns to the camera and he's like, and if you're staying at a hotel, make it a Hilton hotel or whatever it is. Like, he does his advertisement at that moment. It's such a bizarre moment. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I have to put that in a documentary or something at some point. Cause it's so weird to go snip right into advertising mode at that exact moment.
And I also saw an interesting video recently by a guy named Bobby Burns. Normally does like just, you know, pop culture stuff, referencing and movie reviews and whatnot. But he did this other interesting video that said how YouTubers manipulate their audiences. And I was like, okay, I'm going to actually have to watch this. And it's the sigh. Okay, you hear them and you see them all the time, and you're deliberately trying to force some kind of emotional context into it before you start speaking. There's been a long time coming, and so on and so forth. When you've done your hair and everything like that, as if you know you just came up with it this second. It's like coming the F on, and then you realize that it's deeper than that when you're talking about manipulation techniques being used by YouTubers in the truth movement. I mean, you expect that in the normal world. And what people don't really expect, what I didn't expect, first coming into the truth movement all those years ago, that you bring all the old habits, all the old deceptions and everything with you into it. And you just wind up having it reflected back to you a lot of the time. How is it?
Yeah, well, we're spearheading a new media form here, and I don't mean we, but I mean just generally. And yeah, to a certain extent, how do you do that? What does it look like? What does it sound like? Well, when I was growing up, it was the newscaster at 6 p.m. reading you the news in the, you know, hushed tones is the serious way in which news has to be delivered. Obviously, that's changing. But when you're thinking, when you're starting out and you're trying to think how to do this, well, you tend to emulate what you know, what you've seen, what you have been taught to trust. And then how do you change that? And what do you, you know, how do you break those doors down? It's a difficult question, and one that I'm thinking about more recently because I've recently been re-digging into Marshall McLuhan and the medium is the message and all that kind of contentious stuff, thinking about the way that information is delivered to a certain extent determines what information is delivered.
Have you ever had somebody say to you, there's nothing you can say that can convince me or something like that? And then the next moment you do say something and it actually does convince them because they had no idea the things that you knew and they have no idea how big their bubble of ignorance actually is. That's the thing.
I wish I had that experience.
Oh yeah. Well,
I mean, I'm sure, look, let's put it this way. People encounter new information all the time and I'm sure it does blow their mind in the privacy of their home when they're sitting there by themselves. But when you're in conversation with someone, to have that experience is extremely rare because people have their defenses up and they have their, this is me and I know what I know and nothing you say is going to change it. To my mind, it's extremely, extremely difficult to change someone's mind in that context. The best you can do is feed them with information that later on they're going to go, I wonder if that's really true. And if they start searching it out for themselves, that might be the trip down the rabbit hole for them. But I get the sense that most people aren't changed on a dime like that because we have these mental defenses and everyone has them. Yourself and myself and everyone who's listening right now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, to have an identity of some sort is, I mean, we're human. We need that. So we have these barriers that we put up around. This is my identity and this is what I believe. And it doesn't blow over with the first wind, right? I mean, you have to really take it on board and you have to really think about, okay, so if that's wrong, then that must be wrong. So why do I believe that? And that's a process that doesn't happen, you know, every day. And if it does, that's probably a sign of some sort of psychic problem of some sort.
One can only hope. There is, however, an interesting thing that's called prefacing. right? If you preface what you say in the right way, you can actually bring down people's defenses before they receive the information. And there was this one time in a bar, actually. There was this guy who was a voter for a mainstream political party, and he knew who I was, and instantly very against me. And I go, well, hold on one second, let's just agree on a few rules here. First of all, I'm not going to assume anything that's inside your head. You're not going to assume anything that's inside mine. We're both going to behave in a gentlemanly-like fashion, operating under the belief that through honesty and communication, we can understand each other better. Do you agree to these principles of interaction? He did. And became friends like that. All right? And that's somebody with a preconceived notion of who I am and not liking me and not liking any of my views, instantly being brought down a peg to be able to receive some of them. Now, is that not the perfect and ideal situation? Doesn't happen every day. It's only really happened that once. But imagine that. If you can go in and say, know your audience, read the room, and then you'll actually be able to preface what you're about to say the right way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer in having messages tailored for a given audience in a given context. So, you know, I mean, if I'm giving a speech to a crowd of people that is going to be hostile to what I think, it's obviously going to be different than giving a speech to a crowd of people that are receptive to what I think, which is going to be different from giving one-on-one or having a one-on-one discussion with someone. And, you know, it's always going to be a slightly different discussion depending on the context of it. And I think you're right. There are certain things, there are ways that people can approach it that are going to be confrontational and in your face, and there are ways that people can approach it that are going to be less confrontational and more inclusive. And I don't think it's necessarily a one-size-fits-all, you know, this approach is always better kind of thing. I think sometimes some people do need a confrontation in their face to get them shocked out of their belief system. That can be effective with certain people in the right context, in the right way, you know, with all the other caveats. So for me, it always boils down to, this is me, this is the way I communicate. There are going to be people who respond to that well. There are going to be people who hate the way I talk or look or think or whatever. And I can't control that. All I can do is be me. And I can't try to pretend to be someone else in each situation so that I can, you know, resonate with everyone. No one's going to communicate with everyone perfectly all the time. So I think you just have to resign yourself to that and just be authentically who you are. And that's what I try to do. And, you know, I mean, I've had some success with it over the years.
Well, you've been going after the individual who can think. And I remember coming out of a documentary once that my friend made, and I said, bro, it's a really good documentary. But the reason why there weren't so many people in the theater, why? And it says, because you made it for intelligent people. Right? And I'm starting to see this now happening in the truth movement to a large degree, that people are starting to get wary to the fact that if you dumb down your content to a certain degree and you introduce emotion, hype, and certain manipulative techniques, you can get a larger audience, which you can then milk for your advertisers and so on and so forth. Now, has it compromised the message? In some cases, I think it really has. Right? The whole Trump phenomenon kind of thing. And it's like, after he's elected, oh, who are the possible people going to be in his cabinet? Okay, now I'll start paying attention to the election after it's all said and done, because before then it's all fluff. Freemasons, Trilateral Commission, Yale School and Skull and Bones and so on and so forth. A whole cabinet full to the brim with them. And I'm like, the New World Order just took over the truth movement. That's what I saw happen.
Yeah. Can I just clarify something that you were saying there for a second? Because I know you don't mean this, but I think clearly the use of emotion, connecting to people on an emotional level, is not the same as dumbing down a message. I think there can be, in fact, it can be important to bring in the emotional level of all of this, because people are obviously going on an emotional journey where they go through this sort of information. But clearly there is a way to do it well, and then there are ways that are just clearly manipulative and kind of I want to force this emotion into you, and generally fear, unfortunately, in the truth movement areas, it's generally fear that is used as the emotional manipulative tool, which is the lowest form of emotional manipulation, I think, because people respond to it, and it can be very popular. It can certainly get people's attention. There will never be a time in history where you can't get people interested in something that you should be afraid of this. So that's unfortunate. But yes, you're right. On the Trump phenomenon specifically, So all of these people who have spent all of these years or decades in some cases talking about all of the manipulation that goes on into these government institutions and how it's really the CFR and the bankers and whatever that are running the show. But suddenly this savior appears from on high and everything changes, even though he appoints all the exact same swamp dwellers directly into his cabinet. It's bizarre. I don't want to psychoanalyze people because I can't read the hearts and minds of men, but I do know that people, I think there's a lot of different factors that go into this, one of which is the bandwagoning, and it's just easier to ride a bandwagon than it is to go against it, and no one's going to fault you for jumping on the bandwagon. Maybe they will a few years down the road, but by that point you can move on to something else, so it's like a moving target. But it's easier to be part of the winning team. Don't you want to be on the winning team? And I understand, how people get sucked into that. It's very unfortunate. But it is just part of this.
It's interesting to me. The words don't be sucked into that, because I just watched an anti-fascist propaganda piece from the American, made by the American War Department in the 50s, called "Don't Be a Sucker," and it talked about how the Nazis used fear of immigrants and people stealing their jobs and foreign corporations and other people of religious groups and little secret societies and stuff like that, and manipulated and divided everybody against each other, turned them all against each other so that they could destroy them one by one, and then took over the country. And I'm like, that's exactly the same fucking thing that just happened. Oh my God. I just watched it happen, and there was nothing I could do, bro. Nothing I could do. People were believing him. No, he's going to make America great again. No, he's not. It's part of the same control system. The very people who taught you about this control system are now telling you that to elect a person who is part of it. Do you not see that they've been incorporated into the control system? I just had to get that out. I'm sorry.
I hear you. I feel it. Well, it's interesting to me how there's all these different cards that they have in their little tool chest, the Trump bandwagon jumpers, as to any action that he does, that you can defend it using one of these cards. One of the cards is, for example, Mnuchin is Goldman Sachs, ex-Goldman Sachs, Soros-connected skull and bonesman. It's because... want your friends close, but your enemies closer. There you go. That's the get out of jail free card for that type of thing. Or he bombs Syria. It's because, he's just doing this as a message to China. It's not really about Syria. Or whatever it is, there's always an excuse. And it's interesting to me. It's like people have suddenly discovered nuance. And it's something that I actually put into my documentary on Obama at the end of the Obama presidency. I had a little documentary, Obama, Legacy of Ashes, where I said in there, one of the lines was something to the effect that when people were voting for the hope and change in 2008, obviously this is the man, he's going to change the system, everything's going to change. And then in 2016, those same people will go, well, he was just one man, he's up against the whole system. How is he going to change it? Exact same phenomenon now. Make America great again, everything's going to change. And then when nothing really changes, well, he's just one man, he's up against the deep state. How is he going to change it all? Mm. Well, that's the exact point. That's the exact point. Even if he was a saint, which he is not, but even if he was a saint, he couldn't change this system because it is the system that is the problem.
Well, I was overjoyed when a friend of mine publishes a magazine called Uncensored, gave me the new issue because he'd been talking about Trump, you know, being able to do stuff and get stuff done. And then he comes out with this issue of Uncensored, and it says, Trump's sellout, why he betrayed the movement that got him elected. And I was like, good on you, bro, good on you. It's like, you know, it's good to see when people actually see the truth and really just sort of take it on board and run with it, you know, because it's been so easy to see through, but the problematic agency of the Trump presidency is the alternative media that got him elected, which we now know to either be dishonest or the most incompetent journalists in the world that have ever freaking existed. Possibly both.
Now, yeah.
What is
the weird thing to me is that even people like in the alt media who didn't fall for it and understood this still tend to give Trump the benefit of the doubt. It's always framed in the sense that, oh yeah, he was right and he was saying these great things during the campaign about, you know, we don't want to get involved in the Middle East and things like that. But, you know, McMaster or whoever, you know, the swamp dwellers, you know, somehow they converted him or they co-opted his agenda or something. No, no, no. He was lying. He was just saying complete lies during the campaign trail because he knew that would be popular to get elected like every other politician ever. Those were lies. Those were not deeply held beliefs of the peacemaker Donald Trump, you know? I mean, it's so weird to me that even his critics won't come out and say he was just another political scumbag that was lying.
Yeah, and what was it? I think it was like 3 days after he got elected, I published my article. Congratulations, order followers. Trump's cabinet is filled with New World Order frontmen and dark occultists, right? And then a couple of people got me on my show. It was like, aren't you saying I told you so a bit too soon, Vinny? It's like, no, I'm not. Okay, I'm just warning you ahead of time what is going to freaking happen. All right, it's like that scene in Minority Report when he rolls the ball along the desk and the guy catches it before it falls. You knew it was going to fall. You know how gravity works. We've seen this game before. But I think James, we needed to see the Bush presidency and the Obama presidency, two-term presidents back-to-back, in order to see that scheme work out and play out, I think, didn't we? I think maybe other people who haven't been following election cycles for 16 years, roughly, don't know about how the Bush presidency was originally stolen off Al Gore and all of that kind of stuff. Didn't know about the rhetoric that they were using. Didn't know how he got wars in order to get reelected. Didn't know about pipeline deals and didn't know 9/11 was an inside job until 6 months ago. You know, we're talking about people with a very, very small base of knowledge with which to garner their political fruit, as it were. Does it pass the squeeze test? And if Donald Trump was a watermelon, it would be the brownest, stinkingest, mushiest, most disgusting, fly-covered thing you've ever seen in your life. And it would be next to, you know, these other beautiful green watermelon, rock melon, you know, other pure fruit that's just sitting there. It's just this big, rotting, festering carcass that was once a fruit, that is there now only to poison everything that surrounds it, all right? That's just kind of what I see.
It's quite a vivid analogy. Yeah, but point taken. And I think, I agree. I understand why 20-somethings, you know, that this is maybe their first or second go around the election cycle, the selection cycle. They can get suckered in by it. They don't have the political kind of history or memory to be able to do this. I'm flabbergasted that people in their 30s or 40s who have been around and have seen some of this and know about 9/11 and things like that would ever get suckered into this. And I'm completely mystified by how people in their 50s or 60s who have been seeing this crap since wherever, Nixon or, you know, whenever, LBJ, have seen all of this time after time after time after time. The birdcage liner gets shat on and then thrown out, and that's how it happens every single time. And you think it's going to be any different with the next political messiah that comes along? I cannot fathom how people still continue to get suckered by it.
Well, that said, we're entering into a different phase now, I think. Like, we've seen it before, but this is different. For example, if you look at the Trump presidency, you're looking at what would be considered in the popular thought base as an independent candidate initially, right? And I thought to myself, whoa. New World Order figured out they don't need to just control the left voting people and the right voting people, but they also need to give puppet meat string out there to all the people who know that there's a scam between that rift. That huge gulf has now gotten so big that I think the New World Order had to compromise their own election process publicly in order to get somebody like that elected, in order to back off all the public pressure. That'll buy them like at least 18 months of solid sitting back, doing nothing to stop the progress of the New World Order by everybody in the United States kind of thing. That's what I thought. That's what I'd do if I was a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag with more money and power than God, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. And I think you're right. I think with every reiteration now, they're going to have to draw out something else from their bag of tricks. It was the smiling black man in 2008 that was it seemed the polar opposite to Bush. Of course, didn't turn out that way, but it seemed that way. And I understand how people fell for it. And now 2016, here's Trump. He seems the polar opposite to Obama in every way possible. But hey, it's another billionaire, a mafia connected insider billionaire. Yeah, he's on your side, guys. But yeah, I mean, again, I understand it's the perception of independence. That's the perception they're playing with this time. And what will be the perception they play with in 2020 or 2024, the first woman president or whatever it is? But again, they'll draw something out of the bag of tricks so that people will get excited again.
Lewis Blank commented on how they were holding up Trump's business acumen as one of the great reasons why he'd be able to help America out. And then he went, bro, he bankrupted a casino. Okay? You don't need a better example of how someone's business acumen is not quite what you think it is. Do you know how you can get into $1 billion in debt and still be considered rich? If you're in that debt working for the mafia as a front man to run casinos where they launder their frickin' drug money. Maybe when your three best friends are known in certain circles as the world's worst human traffickers, gun runners, and drug traffickers. Right? Maybe that's the case. See, it was like, okay, it's just so obvious there. Now, on from the Trump presidency issue, how has this changed the political landscape within the truth community? I've seen it being split very, very strongly now, not in favor of Hillary, just all in favor of Trump, like the whole truth movement pretty much, 90% just straight on this Trump train. And then there's the 10% of people that are just like, no. And then there's maybe a little fraction of whatever. Oh, maybe Hillary would be better if she was going to die during her presidency from her health issues or something. It was just like, it's the weirdest choice we've ever been given. And I think it changed the entire landscape within the truth movement and how it moves politically. It was divided just masterfully.
Yeah. Well, certainly there have been divisions that have been brought out by this, but that's fine from my perspective because I don't think there is a truth movement, but if there is, I don't think I'm part of it. I certainly wouldn't identify as being part of it. I think that concept may have existed around the 9/11 truth movement in the immediate wake of the, 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But at this point, what does that even mean? I mean, it's not even a useful label to describe anything, because if it can describe Trump wagon supporters and, other people, there's so many different issues. I'm not putting myself into any movement, and I'm not, a card-carrying member of any party or movement or anything. I am who I am, and I'm just going to say the way I see it. And the labels like that become counterproductive at a certain point. So it doesn't bother me. In fact, it might be a good thing overall to make people realize, oh, maybe there isn't a truth movement. Maybe it's just a bunch of people who have these different ideas, and maybe we have to individually sort our way through those ideas. And obviously, I'm not saying I'm 100% right about everything, but I'm saying I'm going to call it the way I see it, and I don't care if there's some sort of orthodoxy or, you know, you can't say that or you must say this. I'm not going to bow down to anyone like that.
Mm. Well, I think of it more as a base rejection of a lot of the mainstream consciousness, I would term the truth movement, the global movement towards truth, which is, as you can see from many major polls in every single direction that you look, majority of people in Germany think that 9/11 was an inside job or that the government isn't telling people enough. And that's big signs in many different ways that you can say that at least populations are waking up in some grade. I agree that there's no movement per se. However, I think it's a leaderless, factionless movement of humanity towards truth in some way, or rather moving what it thinks is the opposite direction to the mainstream lie and narrative. That's what I kind of mean and reckon by it. And likewise, conspiracy theorists mean something different to me than it does to the CIA. I think it means a person who believes, absolutely believes with total conviction, you can't convince them otherwise, that powerful people who have a lot of influence are prone to using their power to maintain and grow that influence. A coincidence theorist, on the other hand, is somebody who thinks everything happens by sheer coincidence, politically, in business, everything. There's no such thing as collusion, backroom deals, or scumbaggery, right? Now, it's a delusional state of being, that kind of thing, but it highlights this one particular issue. Are we willing to question ourselves and what we think is true once in a while or not?
Yeah, and that goes back to, I think, what we were saying earlier about the construction of our identity and how it's very difficult to get past people's defenses that they erect around that identity, and that's equally true for people who consider themselves part of a truth movement or whatever you want to call it, as it is for normies or whatever you want to call them. I tend to stay away from the sheeple kind of tags and all of that really divisive and stuff, because hey, if that's the case, then I was absolutely there, you know, a decade ago before I started getting into all of this. So I don't want to dehumanize people in that sense. But yes, and I think it is an ever-going, ongoing process of questioning assumptions. And again, no one's going to be 100% right about everything and, you know, never able to fundamentally question what it is they believe. But at the same time, we need a good, solid process for at least discovering the ground level truths of our base assumptions. I think it's almost more about the process than it is about the facts or the determinations that we come to, because if you have that process in place, you can continue to apply it to beliefs. You can continue to question what it is you believe and why you believe it. And that way, it's more about the process of getting towards truth. Because again, no, I don't think anyone has the 100% omniscient perspective, the knowledge that would be necessary to say, I know the truth about X, Y, and Z in their totality. But if we have that process in place, we can at least always be getting closer to it. And this was reflected in a podcast episode I did recently about the Glass-Steagall Act, as it's called. And the fact that I completely went along with the narrative that I'd heard for many, many years about Glass-Steagall was this great government regulation that kept commercial and investment banking separate. And when that was repealed in 1999, then it all went to hell and 2008 collapse happened in, you know, XYZ, connect the dots. I never questioned that. I never looked into it until I did. And then I realized, oh, wait, it's actually much more complicated than that. And there is actually no direct through line from X to Z there. I don't know how I did that. And so once you, again, absolutely everything can be questioned. And once you get to those base assumptions, you might start to reformulate it. And sometimes that does involve an identity change. Sometimes it just means, okay, now I have to adjust it and think of it this way. And it's interesting to see the way people will defend things, even when they know them to be incorrect.
There was a there was a New Zealand guy who just gave. Oh, I was so great to see this, James, and it was really good to my heart because I've been doing this like alone for a long, long frigging time. So, first of all, it was a New Zealand scientist, a very renowned scientist, giving a public meeting with slides and everything about chemtrail geoengineering in New Zealand. And I was like, oh, first time I ever seen anything like that. Second really great moment, somebody actually filmed it and uploaded it for other people to see. But not just that, they actually edited it too and then put his slideshow in artificially so it wouldn't be all fuzzy like it is when he normally filmed the slideshow. And I just gave him a big like, gave him a subscribe, put a big comment on there, just thank you for doing what you're doing and doing all of that kind of thing. Now, what he said during this thing was he talked about this dynamic whereby the more you don't know about something, the more you think you know about it. So if somebody knows nothing about chemtrail geoengineering or whatever, they'll say, nah, that's a hoax, that's complete bollocks or whatever, and they'll be absolutely sure that what they're saying is true because they don't know what they're talking about. And that same dynamic happens everywhere you look. People who don't know what they're talking about, who are absolutely sure of something they know nothing about. And this interesting dynamic is it's all pervasive in every single thing. And when I interviewed Jeff Doherty, the Christian whistleblower, we talked about how it's so important to know about your own blind sides. I mean, he talked specifically about the religious blind side within the alternative media who are willing to be manipulated by church doctrine and things of this nature, which was made up by the Romans to make people subservient slaves to an overlord class, right? And it's just like, dude, if you're going through the quest for truth, sometimes you also need to know the truth about your own beliefs, where they came from, how you got indoctrinated into them. Were you young? Were you very tired? Were they speaking very, very slowly, almost in the same pace as the human heart? Was there fluorescent lighting? Was there repetition involved? These are mind control programs, right? And the greatest part about being part of a mind control program is that you don't know you're a part of it. That's a very scary realization that I think everybody needs to come to in their own time.
Indeed. Yeah. Yes. So
that religious element within the so-called, you know, truth movement, okay, are we being blinded to it? And this huge war that is now being cooked up and conjured, this Christians versus Muslims, even though the Muslims that you're going after are ISIS, which are really US special forces who have nothing to do with Islam. And then you've got a whole bunch of other people in the Christian right media just going, these people are so freaking dangerous. And the fear has gotten up so to such high levels. And then you've got all these false flag attacks coming out constantly to reinforce that narrative. Be afraid. Hype this kind of war up. And you're like, oh, my God, what's going on here? What are they trying to cover up? What are they trying to conceal with this division here?
Right. Well, I mean, we have to go back to the Clash of Civilizations idea that has been implanted by CFR critters for 2.5 decades at least. I mean, before all of this started, at the fall of the Soviet Union, they started talking about the Clash of Civilizations and the remaking of world order. It was Samuel Huntington who wrote the book, but Bernard Lewis and others have been talking about it before that point. And so we have been, I think, slowly prepared for this for a very long time. And again, you don't have to go very far into the archives to discover how the soil was prepared for that. Obviously with Huntington's book in the early 90s, and then in the late 90s, you can see in the CFR's Foreign Affairs Journal, you see the various preparatory parts about the Al-Qaeda myth being laid out in Foreign Affairs. And there, I mean, for example, that article that was co-authored by the 9/11 Commission Executive Director, whose name is going to escape me off the top of my head. I know it, but anyway. He co-authored that report that was talking about, well, if something happened like, oh, I don't know, Osama bin Laden destroyed the World Trade Center, this is the way it would reshape America. So we've seen that soil being prepared for decades, and this is the inevitable point that we're reaching. And then, of course, they use their military wars of aggression in the Middle East to create the destabilization, to create the mass flow of people that becomes this mass migration that they then also use as this, you know, divide and conquer wedge that they can use to further terrorize the people. And this time willingly, you know, in the people's name. We need the police state. We need the government. We need, you know, the intelligence agencies to save us from these Muslim hordes. It's amazing how it all works out on every level for the people who want to centralize control. And again, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, fear as being the perhaps the most effective form of emotional manipulation. If you can get people fearing, then you can get people to discard everything that they believed or everything that all the principles and ideals that they hold, as long as you keep me safe from the bad boogeymen. And unfortunately, that works even on people who like to pretend to claim to be on the truth side of things. They're now falling for this particular wedge in record numbers. And, you know, you can see it. You can see it in people who are now advocating for the very police state that they used to make documentaries arguing against.
It's almost like a prepared script. The alternative media sort of going from this anti-authoritarian, pro-libertarian, pro-truth of all facets and natures to pro-authoritarian, pro-fascism, and essentially censoring a large amount of the truth. And it's quite interesting to see the dynamic, how it's like a bell curve, you know, it goes up and then it goes down.
Yeah, draw people in with a convincing narrative using the truth and then redirect that truth. It's a jujitsu move of some sort, and it's unfortunately extremely effective because a lot of people have gotten their identity invested in this media personality or in this idea of a movement to the point where now they can't differentiate themselves from that. And so, oh, the herd is moving this way now. I guess I have to move that way too. It's interesting that, you know, the first insult that people come up with is sheeple to talk about people who don't know about 9/11 truth or something, but you really think there isn't a herd movement in the truth movement as well? You don't think there's that kind of impulse going on?
Well, they never heard about that. God, that was a terrible pun for you.
You've had better, but that, you know, I appreciate it.
As I say, there's only one thing worse than the New World Order. The jokes of Vinnie Eastwood. Now, the alternative element I wanted to get into here is about how not only is it very interesting that you actually made exactly the same point that I wanted to make, and I just shut up and let you make it, about people making their own mind up and not trust a figurehead, all right, and not follow somebody blindly. It doesn't matter who it is. Everybody can be compromised. Everybody can be wrong. There are infinite possibilities in this universe. Never, ever, ever just put your stake down and go, this is my belief structure now. I will never reconsider it or whatever. You know, put your stake in the ground and fight for your beliefs, but don't allow them to not be challenged. All right. I remember one time I got in an argument with one of my listeners when I questioned his logic, and he goes, don't you ever question my logic again. Is it logical to never question logic, though, bro? And he's like, oh, get out of here! As I like to say, history makes hypocrites of us all.
It certainly works out that way, doesn't it? And, you know, I mean, that, think of how many media personalities, alternative or otherwise, you know of, that include caveats and include, well, I don't know this, so this could change things, or puts those types of things into their work. And how many of them just say, this is it, this is the way it is, this is the truth, and if you don't believe it, you're a sucker. Obviously, the latter one is much more popular. That's the way people, and it's because it's the way that people are trained to think, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Look at it, listen to that, you know, he's 100% sure.
A caveat
so
on that.
This is someone I can trust.
It's not that's how they were trained to think, it's that they weren't trained to think.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. They were trained not to think, maybe.
Well, so the thing we were talking about in the beginning of the broadcast is when you go from your old, you know, quote-unquote sheeple life into the quote-unquote truth movement, and you don't realize that you are actually still the exact same person. It's just now you think that this is the thing to blindly follow. It's not about that. Just because you quit the Church of Satan doesn't mean becoming a born-again anti-gay bashing Christian is going to be the best course of the move. Maybe the truth is somewhere in the center. Maybe it's usually a little bit more gray. Maybe somebody can't give you all the truth that you want in a 30-second soundbite. Maybe it's a little bit harder to make up your mind. Maybe it's...
Yeah, you know, that's an important point. That's such an important point because... Again, I think I said this before we started recording, but I've been going through Marshall McLuhan and Medium is the Message kind of thing recently. And of course, part of that idea is, the medium shapes the message that comes out. You can't convey certain ideas or you have certain types of thoughts because it is a visual medium or what have you. On the internet now with Twitter and with these YouTube viral, 2-minute videos, it really is rewiring people's minds to expect these extremely truncated statements that, that then, because of the comment sections or the social media discussion that goes on, is always about just kind of discussing, critiquing, and, oh, you didn't say this, you didn't mention this, to the point where it is becoming more and more difficult to formulate a thought because there are the 800,000 different parts of that people are going to say, are going to say, oh, you didn't say this, you didn't say that, you didn't bring in this context, to the point where it's becoming more difficult to have a real communication, I think, through this internet medium. And again, I think that's something that we're figuring out, and it's not necessarily a fault of any person involved in that conversation. It is the nature of the conversation we're having, but it does lead to that, again, it does prioritize people who have the very straightforward, very, ABC through line that this is the facts and this is what you should believe. And I think the most insidious part of that is that I am becoming more and more pessimistic. I've always known that people are not fundamentally rational and they do not go on evidence alone. It's a whole series of things. It's emotion and belief systems and all of this. But I'm becoming even more pessimistic about the ability of facts to change people's understanding of the world because I see it more and more in my own work. For example, I recently had something up about the JFK myth. The idea that JFK was about to end the Fed. He was going to end the Fed, everybody. Look, he was doing these silver certificates as a way because he was going to stop, the Federal Reserve printing money and all of this, which, if you kind of glance with one eye a little bit over the executive order 11110, it kind of looks like it might be like that. When you actually look at it and look at what that executive order says and what it was actually changing and in what context it was, and you look at the other statements that he made in 1963 and you look at what ultimately was happening and ended up happening, you find out it was the exact opposite. He was specifically, and in his own words, trying to end the use of silver as a monetary instrument by the U.S. Treasury so that they could, and he specifically brought in Federal Reserve notes in denominations of $1. That he was trying to get the Federal Reserve more involved in the monetary system, the exact opposite of this Federal Reserve myth that everyone parrots and that I've probably said somewhere in the past. And when I brought that to people's attention and laid out the documents, look at his economic report from 1963 where he says he's going to do this. And then he signs this act on this day at the same time as he signs this executive order, blah, blah, blah. Fact A, fact B, fact C, fact E. Look at these facts. They're exact opposite of what you believe. Then I get some people, not everyone, but some people attacking me saying, oh, so you're saying that Oswald killed Kennedy? No, I'm not saying that. That doesn't follow at all. I'm saying that what people are saying about him ending the Fed is 100% wrong. That does not mean that Oswald killed Kennedy, he was a lone nut, everything's right with the assassination story. Those two are not logically connected. It's a complete logical leap that makes absolutely no sense. But again, it's someone trying to protect their worldview and trying to protect their identity. I have said this in the past. I have been on this, you know, this, I've planted my flag on this hill. I'm going to die on it. And so anyone who's saying anything against it must be 100% against me and everything I believe. So I'm becoming more and more pessimistic about the ability to really change people's understanding through facts and evidence. There are people who are just never going to really let that penetrate their consciousness.
Well, it's said that being jaded and cynical are the two signs that someone is an actual journalist, because they see things and they don't lie to themselves about it, what they're seeing. You know, it gets to that point sometimes, I admit, as well. So one thing that gave me hope was what Dr. Rima Labo told me about this concept called the seventh man. First person comes up to you and tells you something contrary to your your very, very strongly held belief. No, fuck off, you're a conspiracy theorist. But if seven people, not you saying the same thing seven times, but seven different people come up to that same person and say more or less the same thing that goes completely counter to their very strongly held belief, that's usually the tipping point that they'll start to consider changing that belief. Now, what that works out in a practical thing I call the information grenade. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, you tell them the facts, and you hope it blows up in their face later. You don't have any responsibility of whether they wake up, and I think that's the part of the reason why truthers and so on and so forth got so frustrated about telling the truth or everything, because they expected, because they had facts, that people would believe them.
Social proof is extremely important. And if people want to check that out, go to YouTube and type in First Follower and watch the video that comes up. There's this viral video. It's at some music festival or something. Everyone's just sitting on the grass listening to some music. There's a guy who gets up and starts doing this crazy dance. And so people are kind of snickering and laughing at him. Look at how crazy he looks. But then someone gets up and starts dancing with him. And it's fun, and everyone's laughing. And then more people start coming, and more, until everybody's up and doing this crazy dance. And the point is, it wasn't the guy doing the crazy dance that changed people's opinion. It was the first person to get up and do it with him. And people see that, and they see, oh, okay, it's okay to join in on this. I mean, it's not something to laugh at and kind of hold to the side. Oh, we can join in. Let's go. And so it's the first follower who changes the dynamic and creates the tide. And I think that's an important thing. There's absolutely an element of social proof that is necessary for people to go out on a limb and say something that they, at least they feel, this is crazy, this is taboo, you can't say this. Oh my God, no, 9/11 was an inside job, that's crazy, you can't say that. And so they need to see that social proof in other people. And I think of that as one of the things that my podcast is doing, or tries to do, is to be the person out there to say the things that other people are thinking, to let them know they're not alone, they're not in crazy, they're not out on a limb by themselves, that there are other people out there. And I get that feedback from people a lot, that, you know, thank you for doing what you do, because I can see there's someone else out there that's like me. It's an important thing for people. It's not just the facts and the details themselves. It's that someone else sees them, that I'm not alone. And that's one of the most effective control techniques of the mainstream, is that they get you to believe you are alone. No one thinks like you. People laugh at you. You're weird. You're crazy. You're out on a limb. You're a conspiracy theorist. No. It's the exact opposite. And whenever we get the chance to actually prove that to people, whenever we get a fair playing field on any medium, it's messages like these ones that come to the fore and start to rise until they start to jigger the algorithms and try to keep them suppressed. But I really do have hope in that much anyway, that there are a lot more people out there with these beliefs than would ever let on in some sort of generic, you know, social situation, because people are always afraid that I'm the crazy one. I'm the only one who sees the emperor has no clothes.
It's what I call the Ron Paul voter effect. There was a meeting in Austin, Texas, and somebody asked, are there any Ron Paul voters in the room? And it was just a normal, you know, thing. And about 90% of the hands went up. And they were like, whoa, we had no idea that there was that this unknown congressman who was like being deleted from the media and being artificially put in fourth place when he won major straw polls and things like that had so much support. And it reminds me of something that Bill Hicks once said. He said the mainstream media is there to make you think like you're crazy because you see the BS right in front of you and something on a gut level tells you that it's bull. But because you don't hear your voice of reason reflected back to you, it makes you start to wonder if you're the one who's crazy rather than society and the people who are running it. James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com. Thank you very much for joining me here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And,
it's been thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And, I think that last point is such an important point that I hope people take away from this is that you are not alone. And, don't be afraid to call out the emperor when he has no clothes because you'll be surprised how many people actually agree with you.
All right. Donate at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and, AmericanFreedomRadio.com if you care. See you again sometime, folks. Thanks, James.
Institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion because they're a do-it-yourself radio network and we just need that so much.
Quality, value, style, service, selection, convenience, economy, savings, performance, experience, hospitality, low rates, friendly service, name brands, easy terms, affordable prices, money back guarantee, free installation. Free admission, free appraisal, free alterations, free delivery, free estimates, free home trial, and free parking. No cash, no problem, no kidding. No fuss, no muss, no risk, no obligation, no red tape, no down payment, no entry fee, no hidden charges, no purchase necessary, no one will call on you, no payments or interest till September. But limited time only, though, so act now, order today, send no money, offer good while supplies last, two to a customer, each item sold separately, batteries not included, mileage may vary, all sales are final, allow 6 weeks for delivery, some items not available, some assembly required, some restrictions may apply. So come on in. Come on in. Come on in. Thank you. So come on in. Come on in for a free demonstration and a free consultation with our friendly professional staff. Our experienced and knowledgeable sales representatives will help you make a selection that's just right for you and just right for your budget. And say, don't forget to pick up your free gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet pocket pencil sharpener. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. And if you act now, we'll include an extra added free complimentary bonus gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet combination key ring, magnifying glass, and garden hose in a genuine imitation leather style carrying case with authentic vinyl trim. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. Actually, it's our way of saying bend over just a little bit farther.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Well, they never sent Sir Hung up or cut off their guests.
Well, that's no fun, is it?
Well, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead.
So wake me up when it's all over.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Because I'm happy.
Come on, if you know what happiness is to you.
Levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening pleasure. And I am referring, of course, to the GCSB, the SIS, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA who are listening. Hi, guys. I'm glad you tune in every week. Very loyal listeners here. Helps the hits on my website to go up at least. Now, my very special guest is Jonathan Gray, a noted New Zealand archaeologist who I actually became aware of nearly – I don't know, it feels like almost like 10 years ago now, John, actually. I put your presentations up on YouTube, and they've been getting steady amount of hits since then because it's some of the most interesting archaeological shit anybody's ever seen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Vinny. Glad to be
now,
with you.
I am a terrible introducer, so I would prefer it if you might introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, Vinny, I started out quite a few years ago with my first expedition down the Amazon into the unexplored headwaters over the Andes, and then gradually increased my outreach into lost technology, because it all began in South America, where I found that the Egyptians had actually left metal discs and plates and documents 3,000 or 4,000 years ago in the uncharted Amazon River. And then I went exploring worldwide and found that there was a pattern of ancient lost knowledge that was the same worldwide. So it was a global knowledge that became lost. Well, ultimately, I then began to hear of people finding ancient things out in the Middle East, and I was skeptical, especially when I heard that one man had found Noah's Ark and he'd found the remains of Pharaoh's army on the floor of the Red Sea and so on. I thought, well, how can one man find so much? So I went out with a briefcase full of objections. He was able to convince me that it was worth investigating myself, which I did. I took a team of scientists with me. We went to various sites and we found that the confirmation was absolutely enormous that these things had actually been found. These events were true. And this led me into further investigations, and I found that that old document, the Bible, was not such a fairy tale after all, and it even had more than 1,000 prophecies in it, which, on checking, were coming true right now around our eyes. So my investigations continued, and I decided all these things had to be known. So let's get on the internet and put up a website and let people know by a newsletter every week just what's going on in the world that's being covered up. And I guess that's where we are right now. A lot of stuff's attempting to be covered up, but the news is getting out just the same, Vinny.
Well, I call it gainful employment, you know, a job that can never run out of work.
Oh, that's so true. In fact, even on these winter mornings, you've got summer over in America, but here in New Zealand it's winter. And even though I find it hard to get out of a nice warm bed, the enormous amount of interest is such that I've just got to keep going all day. It's really time-consuming but very absorbing and very fascinating.
You kind of described my morning in Auckland today and my life, you know, so... It's an illness, I think. It's one of those things that manifest, which tends to be, I would say it's an illness of the mind that's very similar to how a beneficial parasite would compel an organism to do something that's good for itself and good for all the other organisms in its tribe.
And it ends up being good because you don't waste your time. Each day is very fulfilling.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to try something a little bit different tonight here, and this may be difficult for you on the radio spectrum listening, but Jonathan, after his many years of research, has an enormous amount of research and articles and pictures and things of that nature that he's got going on. So, Jonathan, I've seen your Noah's Ark stuff. I've seen some of your work on the discovery of the Ark of the Covenant even. But I was wondering, what haven't I seen? Because you wrote this book called Dead Men's Secrets about 20 ancient technologies that were more advanced than what we've got today. But I haven't seen any presentations on that kind of stuff.
You mean video presentations?
Or pictures or anything you happen to have.
Okay, well, I've got thousands of pictures, Vinny. It's a matter of where do we start and where do we go today?
Where did you first find out that the ancients had better technology than we did? What was the kind of first thing that tipped you off?
Oh, yes. Well the first thing was that down in South America, that there were reports that when the Spanish conquistadors first came into the Inca territory, for example, up in the Andes, and then over the other side into the jungle, they found the remains of lost cities, and lights were still burning in them, ever-burning lights. And so that's something that just wouldn't exist in our civilization. Once the power grid goes down, the lights stop. But here was this, and so I thought, now, how extensive was this? And I began to hear reports of the Marianas in Egypt, Syria, Italy, elsewhere, and so my travels began, and I found that yes, there was a secret of lights that never go out, ever burning lights all over the world at one time. We've lost it, but there are still parts of the world where these lights still burn in remote areas. For example, in Irian Jaya, which is now part of Indonesia, explorers were up there going into the mountains, and they laid their heads down to rest during the night among some ancient ruins, and lo and behold, it didn't get dark. they looked up, and there were these big 20-foot poles with these lights that just were visible during the night. These men actually went to a town planning conference in Pretoria, South Africa, and made an official report on their discovery. That's just one typical example of what's being found today.
And have you got any pictures or things of that nature relating to those?
Not particularly the ever-burning lights, because I'd want to get something myself that I could photograph, but I haven't been into Area Njaya yet. I've been to Papua New Guinea on the other side, but not that far.
What was your first expedition where you did start taking pictures of things yourself?
Well, I guess it was when I got into the Middle East I started doing it. Some other expeditions I made, I didn't have a camera. Or actually, yes, I did have a camera on one of them, but I ran out of money, so I hocked my camera to get money to buy other equipment, like a bulletproof vest that would protect me when I went down into the blowpipe area where they shoot you from behind.
Well, look on the bright side. Both of those pieces of technology can take a shot.
That's right.
If it seems to be the Middle East there, I mean, how old were you at the time?
Oh, I was 30 years of age.
Yeah. And how did you find that as well, like going to a new section of the world and uncovering weird stuff? What was your first excursion there like?
Well, it was incredible. Actually, talking about the Middle East, I went up actually to into the mountains of Turkey, where I didn't realize it at the time, but I went into an area that was hot with gunfire. And this is where the remains of this big boat in the mountains was. I pulled into the little town of Dubyazit with my friend Trevor Prestige from Western Australia. I took him with me, and we made our first penetration of that area together. And we pulled in at this little hotel about 6 o'clock at night, and the street was absolutely deserted. Now, this was uncharacteristic of Turkey, and so I thought, okay, well, I don't know why there's nobody around in the street, but I saw a big sign supermarket, and we were a bit hungry, so I said, Trevor, you check in at the hotel, I'll join you shortly, and I'll go and get some food. Well, I walked across the road, and this big supermarket sign covered over a tiny little shop that was probably not much bigger than a bathroom. And in it were packed a whole lot of shelves of goodies, but I couldn't get in. It was locked. And then I looked at the shop window, and I counted three of them, three bullet holes in the window. Oh, my, I thought, maybe we don't have to buy food tonight. Let's get up to the hotel. And so during the night we were sleeping, and suddenly Trevor shouted out to me, Jonathan, wake up, wake up. And I listened. I heard something fall in the street, and then I heard gunfire, heard dogs barking. And we laid low during the night because our hotel was being attacked. Now, it was the Turks attacking the Kurds, because this is a Kurdish area that wanted to secede from Turkey. And it held a lot of oil, and Turkey, of course, needed the oil supplies and that territory to pay back the West for its loans. And so a war was on here between the Turks and the Kurds inside Turkey. And when we got out of the hotel the next morning, we were told that 13 people had died within 100 metres of the hotel in the gunfire. So That was the kind of atmosphere that we did it in, and I had a Kurdish driver, and we wanted to go to his hometown to look at some ruins. And as we drove along the road, suddenly here was a Turkish military convoy blockading the road. And when they found out that Trevor and I had a Kurdish driver, boy, that did they see red. We were arrested immediately. We were thrown into a military compound with the threat of prison for life as spies. And it took us quite a little bit of manipulation to eventually get through to the governor. And the governor said, I know what these men are doing. They're not spies. Let them go. So we went free. But that was only the beginning of what would happen in Turkey. Every time I left Turkey, I was always glad when we got outside the the space limit of its territory in the air.
Every time, eh? Because every of your little time. Turkish skirmish. Man, that's a freaky frickin' occurrence, that is, man. Like,
when
you realize that your life is not in your hands anymore, that somebody else could just end your life, whether it be imprisoned for it or end it literally.
Oh, yes. Anything like that could happen. And that was only the beginning of what happened. Every trip we made was hair-raising. And there were many times we could have just ended up there and never come back.
Why did you keep going back?
Well, once this gets into your blood, it's like a fever. As they say, gold fever. You know, people just don't stop once they catch the fever. And archaeology and discovery, it does build its own enthusiasm in you. You can't help it. And once you discover one thing, you know, okay, now this has been covered up. What else? What else now have we been lied about? Because there's a lot of lying going on in the establishment regarding things such as this.
It seems that the trick here is to put out as many lies as possible, one after the other, after the other, after the other, and they actually perform a great big pile of lies that collectively cover up the truth, because whichever lie that you expose and peel off the layer, there's only another lie to dig down beneath, right?
Oh, yes, one lie covers up another. Now little children do the same before they learn to be honest, and they'll tell a lie. And then when they're caught out, they cover it up with another lie so that they won't get punished for the first one.
Mm.
Now, but of course, this is so. The establishment has been taken over by people who are hostile to us learning the truth about certain things.
What certain things specifically?
Well, one thing in particular is the lie of evolution. This has been around for quite a while now. Because man does not like to think that he owes some kind of allegiance to a higher authority. He wants to run his own life. And the evolution theory was a nice out to that to admitting that. Human nature being what it is, we're all very, very selfish, and we like to think that we're in charge of everything, but that's not necessarily so. There are laws, there are moral laws, there are laws which protect us, and they're based upon love, love to our Creator, love to our fellow man. And it's a truth that once you put others first, you are a happier person. But there are people out there who don't want that to be, they don't want that kind of experience. They just want to be in charge no matter how they get it. So the evolution theory is admitted by lots of scientists that I know personally. It's admitted to be a hoax. And so I dug into that question too, the creation-evolution battle. And I came up with so much evidence relating to that I've written quite a few books and put out videos on it. One is the discovery that is destroying evolution. The lost races, dating hoax, and so on. There's a lot of information showing that everything is beautifully designed, everything is so beautifully planned. Now, the computers we're using today, could anyone with common sense believe that the computer just evolved from pieces of bolts and nuts that all came together and formed a pattern that works and thinks? Yet we've got a brain that's beyond even better than that, designed so beautifully and so well, and with protection factors which help the body to renew itself if it gets into trouble. And once again, we've hijacked that, and we've made it a hoax that it's designed well, when it really... Our brains are the most amazing thing that we know of. There's nothing man's been able to invent that comes anywhere near the brilliance of design of the human brain.
Except the female form.
Well, it's made to be beautiful too. and the very emotion of love, for example, is something which just could not evolve. Things that are just coming up out of mud couldn't suddenly develop love for each other. There's no law in nature that makes that happen. It's something that has to be implanted into a person. And then there are beautiful forms like the female form, which helps to activate that love in the male.
And considering the most beautiful of females all happen to go by a completely perfect mathematical variation of symmetry, right, that you don't really see elsewhere. It's like, okay, come on. You've got something that's very specific. It's incredibly mathematic, totally symmetrical. And in order for that to exist, you'd need to couple proteins together in combination 64,000 plus, and each of these proteins would have to be assembled in precise order. That's like trying to put the code on a safe that has 2,000 buttons and trying to press them 64,000 times correctly at a guess. That's how logical the mainstream concept of evolution is. And what is it when we talk about creationism versus evolution that people don't get is that Darwin already inbuilt into his philosophy that it could be easily proven wrong if any such instance occurred. That instance would be if you found something that had evolved two things that couldn't have functioned by themselves. They evolved together. That can't happen under his theory, because his theory was only microevolution that was based upon the finches and the Galapagos. One finch would have a slightly sharper beak than another finch who lived on a different island, because they ate different kind of nuts, and over various generations, a long period of time, their beak got slightly sharper and slightly sharper and slightly sharper. It's continuous microevolution. That's how you create those different species. However, there's something called the paramecium propeller, which is a very tiny little Well, it's obviously a paramecium, and it's got a little propeller on it that allows it to propel itself around your bloodstream and so on and so forth. And it's actually got a crankshaft. Now, how could the propeller tail and the crankshaft exist either by themselves without being working together? Because they only work as one. And the answer is it couldn't. So something designed it. Something made it. And if something's making the tiny microscopic organisms to a precise mechanical fashion with mathematical precision, what do you think the chances are that we got here by accident?
Yes, but when you consider that the first male and the first female perfectly designed to merge together physically could have independently decided to evolve and reach that that perfection of design at the very same time.
You know, just all sheer coincidence, folks. Nothing to see here. We're not slave species created by alien overlords long ago in different color codes so that we would know who owned us. That didn't happen. Trust me, you're all free.
Yep, that's right.
What do you say to something like that when you go, okay, look, your entire concept of how we got here and what you're here to do has been a lie for the whole time you believed it? A big, big, big freaking lie. How did that affect you?
Well, I felt an anger welling up into me. How dare these people try to put this over us? Are they insulting us with a theory like this? It really is an insult to the human intelligence to be told that you've got to believe this because it's the only truth.
If you believe that these things are not the case, what do you reckon the story of creation actually was then?
Well, I have learnt to believe that that book, which is known as the Bible, historically and archaeologically is absolutely watertight. There is not one historical or archaeological error in it of the thousands of statements it has made. And I've had plenty of years to check this up and interviewing with other archaeologists and researchers, the same conclusion. But I would say the most compelling fact is this, that the book itself has a design, a pattern itself, that the actual words themselves have a pattern in them, a numerical pattern which is unbelievable and does not exist in any other document on earth. And therefore, this pattern shows more than human in a human origin. I could go into this. I've written a book on it actually too. The Russian mathematician who became a university professor in the United States, Ivan Panin, he spent his whole lifetime chasing this mathematical pattern. Every word, every letter in the original language, which is Hebrew for the Old Testament, Greek for the New, has this interlocking sevens pattern, like the interlocking wheels of a master clock, you might say. Now, the construction, the linguistic construction, whether you take it on the words or the numerical value of the words, because those two languages, every letter is the same as a new number. It's a mathematical masterpiece. Now, just to do one of those books, Matthew, for example, would have taken more than 1,000 years to do it with trial and error if we had a computer in front of us. Now, Matthew had no computer. He wrote it in just 5 years. The control of guidance in this is absolutely phenomenal. So what we have here is a supernatural control from a power which has the same supernatural control on the patterns of creation. And this tells me that you can trust its message. Now, having just touched on that and not gone into any proof or any examples of it, That alone proves that the Bible can be trusted as a document for a source of information, whether it be for the past, the present, or the future. And now, more than 1,000 prophecies.
It's interesting you should say that, because that's the main tenet of the Kabbalah, is to use the past and the lessons and the principles that it has within it to create a framework by which to analyze the present and predict the future.
That is right, yes. And there's more than 1,000 prophecies in that book, that compendium of books. And these prophecies have been coming true like clockwork. Even dates and names of people have been given hundreds of years in advance. The date when an event would happen, plus the name of somebody who would be involved in the event. And sure enough, hundreds of years pass, the time arrives, the event happens, and the very person who's named is involved in it. Now, no human being has that ability. Yet this book is full of things like that.
Now, there was a theory, of course, that the New World Order, the elite, the heavy metal Satanists, essentially, have been using the Bible as a playbook and staging world events in co-design with it, specifically to solicit that belief. And in so doing, the other parts of the Bible must be true then, if running by that thought. And then you talk about how there's the tribulation that happens and how those who believe shall be saved. And he thought about it like, if you're trying to make somebody stand down to not fight, to literally be a subservient slave and make it much easier for your captors, wouldn't that be what you'd do?
Well, you might do that. An interesting angle on this, Vinny, is that the New World Order is prophesied, it is predicted, and also its destruction and coming violent end is predicted as well. So it's not good news for the New World Order in the end.
And in terms of the actual creation story, you're saying that the Bible's 100% accurate on that, and then it's capable of predicting future events and things of that nature. It also talks about Armageddon, which is the revealing of great truth, that at some point these things which you've discovered and many others around the global community are uncovering, the lies and scumbaggery that have concealed our true past and fate and future and whatnot, will sometime at some point come into view. You think this is possible? Do you see signs of that coming?
Oh, I see signs of so much that seemed impossible just even 3 or 4 years ago coming now through into reality. And times and dates have been given. The Muslim phenomenon now has long been in the Bible, and it's been predicted before it happened. For example, the Bible actually gives symbols also, but explains the symbols, because an average reader, a cursory reader who just reads the Bible just to criticize it or to find fault with it, will never bother to dig deep. He'll just read something and say, there you are, look at that, without even knowing that it explained itself further. And the symbols that are given in Bible prophecy, some prophecies are given literally, so you take them exactly as they are, but where a symbol is given, the symbol is explained. And you just read on a little further and it tells you. Now, concerning the Muslims, a very, very interesting set of symbols have been used, and there's no question at all that they're coming true, and you can predict what's going to come next. For example, in the book of Revelation, it talks about locusts coming up from the desert, and they are so thick that they form a dark cloud that darkens the sun. And now the first place where you find a word mentioned in the Bible is understood by Jewish expositors as being a clue as to how you're to understand that word later. And whether you take it literally, everything should be taken literally unless there are some symbols there. But once they're symbols, then you must take it symbolically, the whole prophecy, everything in it. But all of it can still be understood. For example, locusts coming out from the desert and darkening the sun with their cloud. And the locusts being shaped like horses that are going out to war and fight with ammunition. Now, locusts don't have that kind of thing, but when they represent a tribe of people who does it, the first time locusts are mentioned is in the book of Exodus, where it talks about a plague of locusts coming from Arabia into Egypt to force the hand of the Pharaoh to let the slaves and the Israelites go. And 10 plagues came, one of which was a plague of locusts. And then when that was over, other things happened. But now, when you go to the book of Revelation and you see symbols and you say, well, who are the locusts? You then go to the rest of that, you go to that prophecy first, you say, well, they must have originated in Arabia, they're Arabs. And then you find other texts which agree with it. And so the prophecy tells you that like a swarm of locusts, the Arabs will come out from Arabia and then they will darken the sun. Now, when the sun is darkened, what other lights do you have in the sky? You have the moon and the stars. And what is left after the sun is darkened? The sun actually represents the Creator and represents truth and righteousness. But but the stars and the moon is a different thing altogether. And the star and the moon symbol is the Arab flag, the Muslim flag. Of course, virtually most of the Muslims, most of the Arabs are Muslims. And there are lots of prophecies which talk about the Arabs and the Muslims. And there's one in Revelation, which I did mention, but I haven't gone into it, which says there are going to be three woes. Three woes means three periods of trouble caused by the Muslim powers.
They call that the Keanu Reeves prophecy, the three woes. Oh God, I'm good. Anyway, continue, please.
Yes, and the prophecy says that the first woe would be
one that would last for 150 years, and then it would be replaced with a second woe, which would last for 391 years, 15 days. Now, it's very interesting that both times it said that the locusts would have a sting in their tail. Now, the scripture then goes on and says that a sting in the tail means this. The head, it represents, if the head represents prophecy, the tail represents false prophecy, a false prophet. So here you have a prophet coming out of Arabia whom the Bible says would be a false prophet, and he would have a sting in his tail, which is a little bit like, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to kill you. Now, what happened was this, that for 150 years, the Muslim power, shall I say something very controversial on now at this moment?
Well, this is the ideal.
Okay. The Vatican actually created Islam. The Vatican saw the powers that were out of, were beyond its control. It had taken over Europe during the Dark Ages, and saw powers that were beyond its control in Africa and the Middle East, Christian powers that would not bow the knee to Rome. So it said, what can we do with this? Okay, here are these wild Arab tribes. Why don't we unite them, give them a mission to fulfill, give them a leader, give them a prophet, and then tell them to go and take North Africa and take the Middle East and then hand Jerusalem over to us. So Muhammad was actually tutored. He had a Roman priest to help him. He was given a Roman wife. He had a daughter called Fatima. Now, that may ring a bell, Fatima. Oh. And he was then told to go out and conquer and get rid of all those who were not subservient to the Vatican, and then hand the Jerusalem over as the Vatican's reward for helping them get off the ground. Well, Islam became a powerful entity. And Islam went right through North Africa, wiped out millions of people in the Middle East as well, took Jerusalem after a lot of bloodshed, and then refused to hand over to the Vatican. And this was the reason for the Crusades. Mm. Now, but still the Vatican did not come under Roman control.
Well, so, just the Vatican creating Islam actually makes sense to me, because they're both Abrahamic religions, and Islam views Jesus as one more of God's prophets.
They do, yes. And what happened now was that Islam turned against Rome. And for 150 years, starting with Muhammad's successor, there were battles going on as the Eastern Roman area came under attack from Islam. Now, then that ended in 1299, that began in 1299, ended in 1449. And then in 1449, there began the second woe. And this was to last, according to Bible prophecy, for 391 years, 15 days, which, if we are to calculate the time, would end in August the 11th in the year 1840. Now, what happened was, as they began this, they called it their second jihad. And they came right up into Constantinople, and the prophecy is given very, very clearly that as the horses approach the city, fire will be coming out of their mouths. And if you look at a picture of an Arab riding a horse with a rifle in his hand, the fire, and he shoots in front of him, the fire appears to come out of the mouths of the horse that he's riding. And gunpowder was used for the first time in the siege of Constantinople. And they took it from the Roman Empire, Eastern Roman Empire.
Wasn't that Suleiman the Magnificent?
That's right, yes. Oh, you know your history. Very good. Yes, that's exactly what happened. And then something else happened. As Martin Luther came up in Europe and started a Roman Catholic priest and started saying that reforms had to be made, things are evil,
and the command was given, wipe out all those people who were protesting, and the armies came to wipe them out. Immediately, the Arab Muslims came to the door of Vienna and wiped out the Roman Catholic army. So that was a very interesting thing, and that was predicted in the scripture as well, that this would happen with gunpowder. Now, the third jihad was to take place after that, sometime later. Now, it's very interesting that last year, the president of Turkey, Erdogan, sent a whole army of tanks into Syria, and he, from his palace in Istanbul, to crowds of people, he announced the beginning of the third jihad and the third Islamic caliphate. And this was on the 500th anniversary of the day when Muslim troops came into Syria, to the same part of Syria 500 years earlier, to get ready for their second jihad. And Erdogan said, my signal of us going into Syria today is the fact that I'm announcing the third jihad, and we will take half of Europe before we're through, and then we'll rule the whole world from Jerusalem. That's what he said.
I wonder if that guy's a Freemason.
Well, most of the Muslim top men are Freemasons.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. They used King Solomon was basically one of the originators of this, right? And they said that what they wanted to do is have the Freemason secret society control both of the Abrahamic religions from afar, so they could essentially have dominance over society without ever being implicated as its true rulers.
Yes, well, this is the plan. The plan is that Jerusalem is going to be the center of a new worldwide empire ruled by the Muslims. That's their plan. And the invasion of Europe over the last year or two is just the precursor to it. It's not like an ordinary invasion. The people are pretending to be refugees, but 9 out of 10 of them are not refugees at all. They're able young men between the ages of 17 to 25 who are pouring in from North Africa as well as from Turkey into Europe. And they plan to take over.
Yeah, and we've seen George Soros-funded organizations that are taking boatloads of these people, a lot of which are actually turning out to be scouted and recruited and things of that nature by intelligence agencies, who are then popping them on boats and having them dragged into the middle of the Mediterranean, just inside Italian waters, where these so-called aid agencies, who never even got a distress call to tip them off, somehow turn out of nowhere to tow all these people into Italian shores to become refugees. I mean, even the Sicilian mafia is now fighting to save its own territory in Sicily. That explains to you how good the international organizations are at bringing organized crime to destabilize the region.
Oh, yes. The easiest way to capture a place is to infiltrate it and then just take over from inside.
Because that way, everybody who is there thinks that they've got a good reason to be there and to stay. And, oh, it's my country and so on and so forth. I'm not leaving. I'm not going to. And if it's the way things are, then that's the way things are. And just sit down and take it and watch everything that you and your grandparents and everybody over the generations has worked together to build crumble into dust.
That's how the plan is, Vinny, yes. And I just I have a photograph in my bag of a man who was examined in Greece as he came through Greece a few months ago, and he was recognized as a terrorist that they had seen before. He was recognized by facial imagery technology, which is a very clever invention. And a year before, in 1995, he had been discovered to beheading children, cutting their heads off. Now he was coming through as a refugee officially to live in Europe. Now, along with him were coming lots of others, young men. Their plan would be to eventually take over from inside. And already in Europe, the police are afraid to go into many zones. This is in France, it's in Germany, it's in Sweden, and so on. But these are no-go zones where even the local police are afraid to go, and they just let them do what they do. These areas are becoming larger and more frequent, and the population is exploding in the among these people too, because a lot of them are marrying unsuspecting European girls, and the European population as a whole is not sustaining its numbers, but the Muslim population is growing in leaps and bounds, and they plan to take over that way. And then, of course, once the world jihad is announced from Jerusalem, they'll be ready to rise up, and they're already there. The same is happening in America. They're coming into Western countries, happening in Australia too. They're coming into the West, and they're planning to take over from inside. It's a strategy you can't fight. You can't, because you don't know who a terrorist is until he strikes. And there are a lot of peaceful people. We think, okay, they're good citizens, but among them there are many who are there for a reason, and they're waiting for the signal.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell which are the real terrorist attacks and which are the fake ones. The real terrorist attacks, you don't hear anything on the media about. There's no police reports. There's no nothing. The fake terrorist attacks that are committed by the government, on the other hand, they've got huge headlines. They're being repeated on the evening news every 15 minutes on an ad break on the television. There's a reminder about the deaths. We stand with London. We stand with France, and so on and so forth. And then if you have a look back at any of the footage or any of the photos, there's blood in places where blood couldn't be. There's people that have their pants ripped open by explosions that have no blood on their legs and no injuries. There's helicopters that are coming in that have a compass and square Freemason symbols on them that are taking away the quote-unquote injured crisis actors. And guess what happens when all the legislation comes through? Does it say we're going to stop terrorists? Does it say we're going to have a tighter check on immigration? Does it say anything that'll actually help? No? What does it say then? We're declaring a state of emergency to take away everybody's rights so that the government could be more authoritarian. Okay. That'll certainly solve the problem of terror, because authoritarianism just doesn't do that.
That's right. Yes, and the terror then comes not from outside, it comes from the capital city.
No terrorist organization can exist without the aid of a national intelligence apparatus. All right, and I think that was one of the head members of Mossad who said that. And they'd know. Because after the Munich bombing, the Israelis got really fucking good at terrorism all of a sudden. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Doesn't that sound like an angry, vengeful Abrahamic God to you? Kind of does to me.
Well, we're living in tremendous times, Vinny, and we see events coming that have not taken our Creator by surprise. He's warned us for them. But a lot of people, most people just don't study these things. They don't know they exist. But it's a wonderful advantage to know these things, and you know what to do before it happens. If you need to escape and be in a safer place, then do so. And the big danger today is in the big cities. From now on, the big cities are going to become death traps.
It'll be like Soylent Green out there before you know it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already getting that way in Auckland. I mean, I see homeless people everywhere I go now. It doesn't matter which shopping district you go to, anywhere in the city, West Auckland, South Auckland, North Auckland, it doesn't matter. There's homeless people everywhere. And article just came out of the paper the other day. What was it? 30% of New Zealand children now living in poverty.
That's very sad.
And the Prime Minister, who started off with about maybe 5% of children living in policy, recently got a knighthood for his service to the country. He's now called Sir John Key of Wall Street. Now, the mind doesn't reel. It boggles. Okay, it boggles. because it's just so freaking disgusting. It's so freaking obvious to anybody who knows what they're talking about. And people keep telling me, oh, Vinny, aren't you being cynical? Aren't you a bit jaded? And it's just like, well, I know it may seem like that, but it's just because I know what I'm talking about. You know, it's the unfortunate business of it, isn't it? So in terms of the future, John, what are we looking at here? What do you think is going to happen over the next 10, 15 years?
Well, according to prophecy, my opinion and yours, Vinny, don't count for anything because we don't know the future, but we can only guess. But as far as the author of the biblical prophecies are concerned, he has a track record which is flawless, not one mistake ever. And he's telling us very, very plainly that mankind's rule is going to come to a disastrous end, and restrictions imposed on the population that will prevent certain people from buying and selling, and that ultimately a death decree will be going globally because people who are just standing up for what they know is right, standing up for their consciences, are going to be declared as terrorists who are making the unity of the world unstable. And so those who do have principles are going to be persecuted. They're going to be in the minority ultimately, because the crowd will go the easy way and go with what they're told to do, even if they know it's not right. Whereas those who stand up for what is right and for their fellow men and for their principles are going to be cut off from society and come under threat. Now, that's going to be the last straw, and the prophecies say at that time Jesus Christ himself will intervene and bring an end to man's rule, and he will take over everything. But at this time, it's going to be so destructive that unless there was intervention, there would hardly be anybody left alive. Now, you know the New World Order wants to wipe out 95% of the population. And
at least.
And the prophecies, three times in the Bible, say that unless those days were shortened, there would no one be left alive. So there will be an interruption to the New World Order's plans, and the people who are making those plans and ruling with terrorism will be the ones that run to the rocks and mountains to hide themselves. Maybe this is why they've got these underground bunkers, because they think they're going to be safe, but they won't be. There'll be no hiding place for them.
Well, I always found it the most ironic and, hubris. It was one of the greatest words that I ever learned when I first learned it. And, okay, here's your brilliant fucking scheme, bro. Lock yourself underground in the dark with a whole bunch of incredibly rich people who belong to satanic pedophile cults, who are the worst murderers, liars, thieves, and drug-abusing scum that have even walked the earth since the time of Abraham. Okay? This is your plan? To escape calamity? There's an old saying that the owner of this network likes to use sometimes. Often, people end up exactly where they deserve to be.
That is right. And that's the old rule. It's an old spirit. It's a physical rule and it's a spiritual rule. That if you sow cabbages, you don't get artichokes. You sow what you reap what you sow, and in life itself, it's the same. You bring cruelty upon others, it's going to come back onto you. You give love to others, it'll come back to you. Whatever you do, you are sowing your own future.
And conveniently, though, the people who run this country and many of the others and the Five Eyes states that we call the Western world don't actually like the idea of truth. In fact, what they like, more or less, is taking away everybody's privacy. Now, privacy, I don't know if you know this, ladies and gentlemen, is freedom. If you do not have privacy, you are not free. Ever since the 1980s, when they developed the technology to put keywords of every single phone call in the United States down on a piece of paper to be logged and red flagged for analysis, nothing you have ever done by electronic means has been done by yourself without anybody watching. Just let that sink in and know the massive, monstrous nature of what it is that you're dealing with. This is why I think a lot of the people that get into any sort of quest for truth, John, don't actually keep questing for truth, because they unfortunately find out what it is, and they find that it's too dark and terrible for them to bear, because they thought that it would be easy to win.
Yeah, I think you made a very good point, Vinny. That's reality. And if we want to know what things are, we have to face reality. We just can't put our head in the sand.
Jonathan Gray, thank you very much for spending some time with me today. And what's your website quickly then?
The website is beforeus.com, www.beforeus, beforeus.com.
Okay. Well, I thought we'd be talking about ancient archaeology and a whole bunch of stuff, but it turns out that we've actually gone really into the prophecy angle, which was, again, exactly what I expected was something unexpected. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and make sure that you do go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and give them $1 a month through their Patreon there. They have a big apparatus and a whole bunch of other shows on this network, including new ones that are coming out soon, I think, and having a little bit of monthly income for them would be very, very handy indeed. I'm also trying to raise a little bit of extra into my Patreon account, so head over to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and either, if you're a Kiwi, I'd love it if you'd start up an automatic payment of $1 a month into my Kiwi Bank account, so I can continue doing this important work for this country, because nobody else will! And there's also PayPal and Patreon options there as well. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.
And information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys, because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nicotine, alcohol, good drugs. Coincidentally, tax drugs. Ooh, how does this work? Thank God they're taxing alcohol, man. It means we got those good roads we can drive on. Because I'll tell you something, I'll be honest, man. If I were going to legalize a drug, it sure wouldn't have been alcohol. Sorry, there's better drugs and better drugs for you. That's a fact. Pot is a better drug than alcohol. Fact. Fact. Stop your internal dialogue. But Bill, alcohol's... Shut up! You're wrong. Get over it. I'll prove it to you, man. You're at a ball game or a concert and someone's really violent and aggressive and obnoxious. Are they drunk or are they smoking pot? They're drunk. I have never seen people on pot get in a fight, because it is impossible. Hey, buddy. Hey, what? Hey, hey. End of argument.
I got an idea about homelessness. You know what they ought to do? Change the name of it. Change the name of it. It's not homelessness. It's houselessness. It's houses these people need. A home is an abstract idea. A home is a setting. It's a state of mind. These people need houses. Physical, tangible structures. They need low-cost housing. But where are you going to put it? Well, that's fine, but where are you going to put it? Where are you going to put it? Nobody wants you to build low-cost housing near their house. People don't want it near them. We got something in this country, you've heard of it, it's called NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y, not in my backyard. People don't want anything, any kind of social help located anywhere near them. Try to do a homeless shelter somewhere. Try to open up a little home for some retarded people who want to work their way into the community. People say, not in my backyard. People don't want anything near them, especially if it might help somebody else. Part of that great American spirit of generosity we hear about. Great, generous American spirit. You can ask an Indian about that. Ask an Indian about if you can find one.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.